Welcome. You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast, the show that cuts through the fog of war and updates you about the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Marina Yevshan, your host of the Russia-Ukraine War Report Podcast, and today is April the 8th, 2024. It has been 3,724 days since Russia started covert military operations in Crimea, 10 years and 48 days since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war, and 2 years and 45 days since Russia expanded its war of aggression. Today's podcast looks at events that happened over the weekend and Monday morning. During the podcast, you will find the Russia-Ukraine war map helpful to visualize the areas discussed. A link is in the podcast description. There are many map updates today. The Russia-Ukraine war report is compiled by our team from around the world. Today's report includes information from our direct contacts and journalists in Ukraine, the Russian Ministry of Defense, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine morning reports, operational commands north, south, and east of Ukraine, open source intelligence, our in-house team of analysts and geospatial experts, and pro-Ukrainian and pro-Russian male bloggers and social media channels with a track record of trying to be accurate. We have one mission, the truth, because the truth matters. Here is my daily assessment. 1. Based on multiple reports that the United States has set multiple restrictions on what military equipment can be provided and how it can be used due to a misguided fear of a Russian tactical nuclear strike, the world is caught in the mutually assured destruction and stability paradox. 2. In our assessment, Russia is setting conditions to capture Chasiv Yar, regardless of cost. 3. We maintain that Russia is setting conditions in three operational areas for future wider attacks. But we continue to question how much combat potential will be available to expand current operations this summer. 4. Russia's trampling of international humanitarian law has been accelerating since March the 22nd. In our assessment, the willful ignoring of blatant Russian war crimes by international watchdogs will continue to encourage escalation. 5. The disjointed response to Russian aggression by Ukraine's allies continues to embolden Moscow, leading to the most serious airspace violation of a NATO country since Russia expanded its war of aggression on February 24, 2022. We maintain that the inaction by the United States and the excessively risk-averse rules of engagement forced on the NATO alliance are creating an environment ripe for a serious international incident. 6. We maintain that United States military aid to Ukraine has ended through January 2025, unless there is an unexpected change in political leadership. 7. The continued attacks on Ukraine's energy infrastructure have incrementally increased the chance of an intentional nuclear accident at multiple nuclear facilities in Ukraine, and the situation is more serious than what the International Atomic Energy Agency is reporting. We start today's report in Kharkiv and Luhansk oblasts. On Saturday, up to 5 Russian S-300 anti-aircraft missiles used for a ground attack were launched from the Belgrade region and heavily damaged residential buildings, a city administration building, a shopping mall, a kindergarten, and dormitories. The attack killed 6 and wounded 11. Late in the day, a Shahed 136 one-way drone struck a residential neighborhood, wounding 3 pensioners. On Sunday, a major electrical substation and switchyard was struck, knocking out power to 410,000 customers. During the same attack, the VKS, Russian Aerospace Forces, dropped 4 Fab 500 UMPK glide bombs in Kharkiv, wounding 2. Early this morning, a Fab 500 UMPK glide bomb hit a high-rise apartment building in Kupiansk, killing 1 civilian. Despite mandatory evacuation orders released last year, over 7,500 residents remain in the frontline settlement split by the Oskil River. In the Kremenna area of Operation Oryo of Luhansk Oblast, Russian forces launched new armored assaults in the direction of Terny, suffered heavy losses before reaching their forwardmost line of friendly troops, and retreated. In the Siversky, Russian forces continued their attacks east and southeast of Bilohorivka with no change in the situation. there were no new reports of fighting in the area of Verkhnyokamyenka oil refinery. Moving to the Donbas, starting in northeast Donetsk Oblast. In the Siversk and Soledar AOs, mutual fighting was reported between Berestova and Vyimka, with no change in the situation. North of Soledar, Russian forces launched attacks along the entire northern flank, striking at Ukrainian positions in Vesela, Rozdolivka and Fedorivka. None of the attacks were successful. We are combining the Bakhmut and Klishivka AOs and renaming them the Kostyantynivka AO. This change has been made due to Russian forces setting conditions to attack Chasiv Yar. Heavy fighting continued east-southeast of Bogdanivka, with Russian forces continuing to suffer heavy losses. The situation in the western part of Ivanivske is extremely difficult for Ukrainian forces, who continue to hold their defensive lines despite personnel shortages, Russian airstrikes, and continued conservation of artillery ammunition. On the approach to Chasiv Yar, Russian troops tried to advance on the T-504 highway, but came under fire from the VKS for the second time in 4 days. Drone video showed that Russian forces were indiscriminately attacking the eastern approaches of the settlement with aerial bombs, artillery rounds, and cluster munitions. Chasiv Yar still has over 700 civilian residents, mostly pensioners who refused to evacuate, with one killed. Operational Command East reported that the, quote, situation in the city is extremely difficult, but there are no Russians there. Heavy positional fighting continued in the areas of Klishivka and Andriivka, with no change in the situation. On Friday, Russia bombed Pokrovsk, wounding 5. There is more information in the War Crimes and Human Rights section. In southwest Donetsk Oblast, Russian forces made tactically significant gains in the Avdiivka AO. Geolocated video showed that Russian troops had entered the eastern part of Novokolonovo, advancing past the railroad grade at the H-20 highway. Russian forces were unable to consolidate their gains, and at the time of recording, fighting was ongoing. The Russian Ministry of Defense, Armored, claimed there was fighting in the area of Novobakhmutivka. Fighting continued in the western part of Berdychi, where Russian forces made additional advances. Russian troops advanced into Semenivka from the south, and fighting continued. Russian forces also made additional advances from Tonenke in the direction of Umanske and Yasnobrodivka. Geolocated video showed that Russian troops had pushed through the northwestern part of Pervomaiske and reached the eastern edge of Netailovo. Russian and Ukrainian sources reported that fighting continued in Pervomaiske, and in our assessment, Ukrainian troops still occupy the southwestern part of the village. Russian forces also continued their attacks in the area of Nevelske, with no change in the situation. Moving to assessment. Shortages in personnel, Russian airstrikes, weather that is favorable for Russian operations, and the need to conserve artillery have forced Ukrainian troops to withdraw along the entire length of the Avdiivka front. In February, we assessed that Ukrainian forces would use terrain to establish better defensive lines, up to 15 kilometers west of Avdiivka, and it appears they are engaged in a retrograde operation to move to more defendable terrain. Heavy fighting continued in the Vuhledar AO. Russian forces have again increased their attacks on Krasnohorivka, attacking from the south. The intensity of attacks on the eastern edge of Georgievka and southwest of Pobeda has decreased. Fighting continued in the center of Novomikhailivka, with Russian forces making marginal gains. However, Russian light infantry was able to advance in the Dachas, north of the fishing pond, in the direction of Paraskovivka. The situation has become critical, and in our assessment, Ukrainian forces will have to fall back to Kostyantynivka. Russian forces continued their subordinate attacks in the Staromlinivka AO, attempting to spread out Ukrainian resources. Fighting continued south of Urozhaina, with no change in the situation. The Russian attempt to advance between Rivnopil and Staromayorske in the direction of Velika Novosilka failed, with the Ukrainian troops retaking lost positions. In Zaporizhia Oblast, there was only positional fighting in the Orikhiv AO, on the southern edge of Robotyne. Due to a lack of air defense, the VKS has significantly increased the number of airstrikes within the AO. Russia shelled Huliaipole, killing 3 civilians and wounding a 4th. The International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, reported that 3 one-way drones struck the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, ZNPP. The last strike on the plant was in November 2022. Director General of the IAEA, Rafael Grossi, said, quote, "This is a major escalation of the nuclear safety and security dangers facing the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant. Such reckless attacks significantly increase the risk of a major nuclear accident and must cease immediately." Unquote. No critical systems were damaged, and Grossi appealed, quote, "to military decision-makers to abstain from any action violating the basic principles that protect nuclear facilities." In an unusual move by Russian occupiers, the IAEA on-site inspectors were given immediate access to previously restricted areas, including the roof of Reactor 6, where Russian surveillance equipment was located. While on the roof, Russian occupiers appeared to shoot down a drone. "In our assessment, after barring access to the roof of the reactor since 2022, we find it highly unusual that instant access was provided." Inspectors reported they found, quote, "superficial scorching to the top of the reactor dome roof of Unit 6 and scoring of a concrete slab supporting their primary makeup water storage tanks." The sound of outgoing artillery fire close to ZNPP has continued. The IAEA did not speculate or accuse any combatant in the strikes. The spokesperson for the Main Defense Intelligence Directorate of the Ministry of the Defense of Ukraine, OUR, Andriy Yusov, accused Russia of a false flag attack. Quote, "Ukraine is not involved in any armed provocations on the territory illegally occupied by Russia at the ZNPP. The aggressor state is once again endangering the nuclear facility, the civilian population, and the environment of the whole of Europe." Unquote. Yusov also pointed out that Russia stores military equipment, has a military garrison at the plant, and has mined the facility in violation of the IAEA pillars of nuclear safety. Here's what I know about what's happening in the Black Sea, occupied Crimea, Mykolaiv and Odessa oblasts. On Friday, Ukrainian officials reported that the port of Odessa restarted operations 2 days earlier with the loading and departure of the first vessel since March the 22nd. Russia appears to have responded to the report by repeatedly attacking Odessa ports and power infrastructure. On Saturday, an Iskander-M short-range ballistic missile, SRBM, struck electrical infrastructure and an administrative building. One person was killed instantly, and 3 more died in hospital. Then on Sunday, another Iskander-M struck the port, damaging administrative buildings and critical technical infrastructure. One civilian was wounded. On Monday morning, Odessa was attacked by at least 5 Shahed 136 one-way drones, with one hitting a logistics and ground transport facility near the port. There was no information on injuries. On Friday, in the unrecognized and self-declared Moldovan Republic of Transnistria, a one-way drone struck a radar station in the Rybnitsa district. The HUR said that Ukraine was not involved and, quote, "would not waste valuable drones for such petty provocations." The Prime Minister of Moldova, Dorin Rechan, dismissed the strike as a provocation and a false flag. Quote, "Let's pay attention to the reaction of society, which is already aware of the reality. These provocations can no longer cause panic or fear." Unquote. After the illegitimate Transnistrian leadership made it clear they had no interest in being annexed by Russia, Moscow turned to the governor and Kremlin puppet of the Autonomous Republic of Gagauzia, Evgenia Gutsul. After a trip to Moscow, Gutsul said that if Moldova and Transnistria were to reconcile, it would force, quote, "the secession of Gagauzia and the return to an independent Gagauz Republic. We are sure that residents of many neighboring Moldovan and Bulgarian villages will support us and join us." In our assessment, this is just noise and follows the same patterns used by Moscow since 1992. The Freedom of Russia Legion announced that they had ended major fighting in the Belgorod and Kursk regions of Russia, with only limited work by sabotage and reconnaissance units ongoing. In the Belgorod region near Shebekina, local residents shared videos of four turbine-powered one-way drones flying into Russia. There was speculation that these were United Kingdom-provided Banshees, but Ukraine has a similar-looking turbine-powered drone. There was no other information shared about the drone strike, not even reports of the glorious victory of all drones destroyed. In the Orenburg region, three berms in and near Orsk have failed, causing major flooding. Some of the infrastructure was built just 10 years ago, and criminal investigations have started. There is widespread flooding in the city, which has destroyed railroad infrastructure and shut down the Orsk oil refinery. Residents complained there was no drinking water and there were multiple reports of looting. Four people have been killed and at least eight are hospitalized due to drinking unboiled tap water. Another 12 are being treated. City managers responded to the confirmed cases of waterborne illnesses by shutting off water service. The flooding is not related to combat activity. High-resolution satellite images showed no visible damage to any aircraft at the Russian military airfield at Morozovsk in the Rostov region or at Engels 2 military airfield in Saratov.
You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. Our team of journalists, researchers, and analysts is funded by readers, listeners, and viewers just like you. To support independent journalism, please consider becoming a patron. You can find us on patreon.com at Malcontent News.
Here is my theater-wide update. Between the evening of April the 5th and the morning of the 8th, Ukrainian air defenses shut down 62 of 73 Shahed-136 one-way drones launched by Russia. During the same period, Russia launched three cruise missiles and at least two Iskander-M SRBMs, with two KH-101 and one Kalibr cruise missile intercepted. The Minister of Energy of Ukraine, Herman Halushchenko, told the United States news agency Bloomberg that Kyiv was looking around the world to find the equipment required to replace up to $1 billion of destroyed energy infrastructure. He expressed frustration about continued delays in military aid and inaction by some allies, adding, quote, "This hunting may be useless if Ukraine does not have enough anti-aircraft defense." Near Terny, members of the Azov Brigade captured a Russian T-72 main battle tank equipped with a new Tsar Reb anti-drone complex. During an assault, a Ukrainian one-way drone disabled the fire control system and optics on the Russian tank. While trying to retreat, one of the tracks became tangled in debris, causing steering issues. The T-72 became stuck against a disabled infantry fighting vehicle, and Russian troops abandoned it. Over the next 3 nights, and frequently under fire by Russian troops 400 meters away, two Ukrainian soldiers worked to repair the track and make the tank operational. The recovery effort included installing new batteries, removing an anti-tank mine it almost ran over, and demining Russian traps. After restoring mobility, a Russian soldier on a moped attacked the two, but was eliminated. While driving the tank back, a Russian Fab 500 OMPK bomb narrowly missed them, knocking the driver unconscious. After recovering, the tank with the new electronic warfare complex reached Ukrainian lines. Interviewing United States officials, Bloomberg reported that China has significantly increased its support of Russia, including providing high-resolution satellite images, electronics, rifle scopes and optics, machinery and tooling for producing weapons, and rocket fuel. The article indicated that the increase in support started shortly after the US Congress blocked military aid to Ukraine. The Minister of Transportation for the Czech Republic, Martin Kupka, said that Russia had made thousands of cyber attacks on European railroad infrastructure. Impacted countries include Latvia, Lithuania, Romania, and Estonia, and have included attempts to hack signaling and control systems. NATO Secretary-General Jens Stoltenberg said that Ukraine may have to make, quote, certain compromises to end the war, but added that, quote, ultimately it is Ukraine that must decide what compromises it is ready to make. We must allow it to be in a state where it really achieves an acceptable result at the negotiating table. Stoltenberg stressed that he was not calling on Ukraine to make immediate concessions, and that peace would only be achieved when Ukraine wins. President of Ukraine Volodymyr Zelensky gave a frank interview to Ukrainian news agency 1+1. The Ukrainian leader said that the country would need 25 Patriot batteries with 6 to 8 launches each to secure the airspace. Quote, there are times when only Patriot or similar can work. And here we have to choose which object to protect, this city or another city. We have a stockpile of anti-aircraft defense today, but we have to think about what will happen tomorrow. Tomorrow the intensity may continue, and we will not have enough. Zelensky added that Ukraine would only receive 10% of the previously promised F-16 fighter planes by the end of 2024. And without further American aid, quote, it will be difficult for us not only to win, but even to stay. Canada announced it would continue to increase its aid to Ukraine. The Finance Minister of Canada, Chrystia Freeland, said, quote, in March, Canada sent Ukraine $2 billion in emergency funding to fill the support gap at a time when the United States was unable to step up and provide assistance to Ukraine. The Foreign Minister of South Korea, Cho Tae-yul, promised to continue supporting Ukraine. The minister said Seoul plans to provide Ukraine with a medium and long-term aid package of $2.3 billion starting this year, and another $12 million to rehabilitate wounded Ukrainian soldiers. In our War Crimes and Human Rights section, we sometimes discuss atrocities, gender-based violence, torture, and human suffering. Today's podcast contains descriptions of multiple war crimes that some may find disturbing. The Russian commander of the 328th Regiment of the 104th Division, Sergei Shtuganov, is accused of ordering the April 7th execution of 3 Ukrainian prisoners of war near Krynke. Video released by Russian troops showed 3 unarmed Ukrainian soldiers placed up against a wall and shot one by one by bursts of machine gun fire. We do link to the video in our daily situation report, but many will find it very disturbing. There is more information in the podcast description. The Ukrainian Parliament Commissioner for Human Rights, Dmytro Lubinets, appealed to the International Committee of the Red Cross to do something and vowed that the war criminals would be brought to justice. Quote, the international community must send a clear signal to Russia. It will not be possible to hide the traces of war crimes. War crimes do not have a statute of limitations, both those who committed them and those who gave criminal orders. Unquote. On Friday, Russia struck the city of Zaporizhia with 3 missiles. 40 minutes later, 2 more missiles struck the same location in a double-tap attack, targeting emergency services, investigators, and the press. The second strike killed 4 and wounded 20, including 3 journalists. Ukrinform reporter Olga Zvonareva required surgery. The US ambassador to Ukraine, Bridget Brink, condemned the attack, quote, Russia attacked Zaporizhia today, killing 3 people with missile strikes timed 40 minutes apart, a horrific pattern apparently intended to kill first responders and journalists on the scene. Russian S-300 anti-aircraft missiles used for a ground attack struck Pokrovsk in Free Donetsk Oblast, destroying the clinic of Doctors Without Borders and wounding their security staff. The NGO tweeted, quote, MSF strongly condemns the missile attack of its office in Pokrovsk, Donetsk region, Ukraine, on April the 5th at approximately 3:15 a.m. The building was destroyed completely and five people were injured, including MSF's security staff. The Doctors Without Borders Emergency Coordinator for Ukraine, Vincenzo Porpilia, said that the Russian missile strike was, quote, far from being an isolated incident, and the destruction of civilian infrastructure has been a hallmark of this war for a long time. After the attack, the NGO announced it was suspending all humanitarian activity in Free Donetsk Oblast, except for supporting emergency care and coordinating ambulance services. The five wounded in the missile strike were civilians who lived near the medical clinic, including three pensioners and a child. UK news source The Telegraph interviewed numerous Ukrainian soldiers and commanders and concluded that the Russian Federation is systematically using CS gas on the battlefield, also known as tear gas. The Chemical Weapons Convention bans CS, and its use is considered a grave breach of the Geneva Conventions. Ukrainian soldiers report that many are only equipped with Soviet-era gas masks, which barely work and have ineffective filters. Five more children were repatriated from the occupied territories, including one orphan. That was a lot to take in, but I do have a follow-up from my Friday podcast. Do you remember the young boy who greets the Ukrainian helicopter pilots flying over his family's farm and who got a surprise visit by a Ukrainian Mi-24 Hind attack helicopter? We have learned what was in the box wrapped in paper that the air crew gave him when they landed. It was full of candy and sweets and a note thanking him for his support and belief in the armed forces of Ukraine. There was a lot of geopolitical news. Speaking on the Sunday morning talk show circuit, the head of the Intelligence Committee of the U.S. House of Representatives, Mike Turner, said that Congress had been, quote, infected by Russian propaganda. Quote, this is absolutely true. We are seeing attempts to disguise messages that are anti-Ukrainian and pro-Russian messages coming directly from Russia, some of which we even hear spoken on the floor of the House of Representatives. He added that this was happening through NATO and that the alliance was gripped in a battle between democracy and authoritarianism. The president for the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, issued a similar warning. Quote, in Europe itself, there are Putin's friends who are trying to rewrite our history and steal our future under the guise of populists and demagogues. Whether it's the AfD in Germany, the Assemblement National in France, the Confederate Party in Poland, or others. The names may be different, but the goal is the same. They trample our values and want to steal our future. In the coming days, weeks, and months, our task is to fight back. Unquote. In Slovakia, pro-Putin presidential candidate and Robert Fico's ally won national elections. Petr Pellegrini is against any further aid or support to Ukraine and is in favor of closer relations with the Kremlin. Finland has decided that it will keep all of its border checkpoints with Russia closed indefinitely. The checkpoints were closed in November due to Russia's attempts to create a border crisis by weaponizing undocumented immigrants. After speaking with the Russian Minister of Defense Sergei Shoigu for the first time since 2022, French President Emmanuel Macron said the tone was threatening, and Shoigu tried to blame France for the Crocus City Hall terror attack. Finally, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Tajikistan dismissed Russian claims that Ukraine was recruiting mercenaries from its country, saying, quote, statements about the recruitment of mercenaries by the embassy of Ukraine in Dushanbe have no basis. And that's what we know. Your support of my home, Ukraine, helps us make history and protect the future for all.
You've been listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. To help keep us independent, please consider providing financial support by becoming a patron. Want on-demand news in your hand? Download the Google News app and make Malcontent News one of your favorites to receive breaking news updates. Thank you for listening.